why don't we go ahead and get started, and hopefully we'll have some stragglers join us in the near future. But, you know, just do the usual introductions of who you are and who you're affiliated with.
I'm Donnie Green. I'm with the North Central Texas Council of Governments Area Agency on Aging. And I'm representing the Promoting Independence Advisory.
I am Bill Carpenter with DSHS.
Great. And I'm Ashley Schweikart, coordinator of the council, and I'm at the Texas Department of Housing and Community Affairs. So in terms of old business, I was just putting on there if anyone had any edits or changes to the draft orders 4 and 5 that were submitted to you all before the last conference call.
I do.
Okay.
I have several, and most of them are really piddly.
That's fine.
And on page 1 of the draft recommendation, I would suggest...
Which chapter is this?
Oh, wait a minute. I printed off 2 documents. I've got... Oh, the Oh, I didn't have that much on the recommendations. I'd also made some notes on the draft recommendations, which is a separate document.
Okay. Well, yeah, we can move to that. I just wanted to see if anyone had any changes on the draft chapters 4 and 5.
Yeah, it looks like I just have 1 or 2 comments on that.
Okay.
Chapter 1, page, I think it's 5.
Chapter 1, page 5, okay.
Yeah, top of the page. What I would like to suggest on that is to broaden it a little bit, because I think that regardless of whether the Aging and Disability Resource Center has a housing navigator grant or position, mm-hmm. there is the need to involve the housing authorities in the ADRC. Mm-hmm. So, I wanted to see if I could send you some draft language that
yeah,
would broaden
great.
That a little bit
yeah.
and just encourage that the ADRCs conduct outreach to the authorities.
Okay.
With us, housing has been the second most common need of ADRC consumers. The first is financial assistance.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a huge issue, and we're really constrained at times in terms of, you know, identifying and helping them access housing.
Yeah, I think that we should definitely address that in our barriers chapter as well. So if you have any language about, you know, I don't know if your ADRC has anything that they could provide in terms of just what you just said, that the housing is the second most common need.
I haven't done that yet, but I will do that.
Okay.
And then on page 7 of 14.
7, okay.
Under recommendation number 4, point number 4.
Number 4, okay, yes.
Yeah. I would just suggest striking an applicant and just say between applicant developers, plural, and the service organizations they plan to work with, just in terms of subject verb agreement.
Sure, sure. Yeah, and this was and these were pulled straight from our recommendations the last time around. This is not new language. How we did on our recommendations from the 2010-2011 plan.
Uh-huh.
So
yeah, it did have a familiar ring to it.
Yeah. But I can correct that language just because, you know, just for, you're right, it is a little awkward. Did someone just join?
Hi, it's Amy.
Hey, Amy, I'm so glad you came.
Yes.
Make it. Thank you. We were just talking about any edits on the draft chapters that have been received by the committee thus far.
Mm-hmm.
So you guys have received draft chapters 1, 2, 4, and 5. And so Donnie was talking about a couple edits to draft chapter 1.
Okay.
Okay, so I got that one on page 7. Anything else? Or on any of the other chapters, draft chapters? Okay. As always, you can feel free to email me if you have any changes to any of the draft chapters. So if we don't want to talk about any more of those right now, we can move on to the committee recommendations on service policy and funding. So basically, the document that I sent out to everyone yesterday that says Service Committee Draft Recommendations. This is basically a compilation of all the discussions that we've been having in this committee as to recommendations to make. So this would be, in effect, the draft chapter for your committee's recommendations. And the information that is on pages 1 to 4 you've already seen, because those are the same recommendations that had been brought forward to you all before. But starting at recommendation number 5 on page 4 and going forward, those were recommendations that are have been recently crafted based on discussions had at the last committee call. And the information that's highlighted right now, that's just stuff that I'm in contact with the correct people at DSHS to get me updated information, because that information is just outdated. So I'm just trying to make sure I have the most up-to-date numbers and dates and things as possible. So that's the reason why there's a couple things highlighted in yellow. But I wanted to see how people felt about this most recent revised recommendations chapter.
And Ashley, this is where I made a number of comments.
Okay.
Just kind of general recommendations.
Okay.
And I realized that I'd seen some of this before, but was able to spend a little bit more time with it this time around.
Okay.
And so on page 1, under it looks like the first paragraph.
Yes.
I would suggest striking age. I don't really think that age impacts an individual's choice or ability to live independently, unless we're talking about a child as opposed to an adult, then age is real relevant. But age in and of itself is not really a factor. It's only when there's a disability that older folks are at risk of losing their independence.
Okay.
And I would also suggest changing fear of living alone to sense of personal safety.
Okay, same paragraph, got it.
Uh-huh. And then...
Housing stock... Just personal safety there?
Yes, sense of personal safety as opposed to fear of living alone.
Personal safety. Got it.
And then in the second paragraph, I would suggest in the second sentence that starts offering a continuum of housing opportunities. It seems to me that we're really talking about group housing opportunities.
Okay.
Allows the provision of step down.
Do you want to specify group homes there then?
Well, I think group homes, I think that assisted living facilities, I mean it's really all of those group housing arrangements.
So when we mentioned group homes and assisted living facilities in the previous sentence on that second paragraph,
mm-hmm.
and then we say offering a continuum of housing opportunities. So I thought that people would realize we were referencing the previous sentence, which meant
That's fine.
I don't know. I mean, if there's another way of crafting the sentence, I'm open to options.
Okay. Or another option might be to just include group in the last sentence.
Okay.
Public testimony received at recent council meetings reflects the need for such a continuum that includes group living arrangements.
Okay. Yeah, I can change that. All right. Any other comments on the statement or the other recommendations that have been created by the committee?
I also made a comment on recommendation number eight.
Eight, okay.
Which is local benefits counselors should establish connections to discharge planning representatives.
Mm-hmm.
And I really like that recommendation. I'm not sure who made it, but
you did.
I did? Well, no wonder. I didn't remember that at all. I would suggest kind of broadening the focus a little bit with the recommendation language so that the second part of the sentence, in order to ensure that persons who are elderly and residing in institutional settings are educated about community-based services and supports and rights too, but we're really looking at helping people who are transitioning access those community-based services.
Okay.
This is something that the benefits counselors can help with. They can help if somebody feels like their rights have been violated, but that's kind of a secondary emphasis of the program.
Okay, got it. Okay.
For recommendation number seven, I have it on screen eight, the final paragraph before we get to recommendation number eight.
Yes.
I'm still in the process of investigating how that can work at other places in the state. So I don't really have any edits to that, just to let you know that I have reached out to the Director of Social Workers at the Austin State Hospital over the past couple of weeks. I just haven't gotten any feedback yet, but I'm not sure if she's... I know she was out of the office once or twice, but still working on that one to see how that can work. I know that I have a self-report from one of the PATH programs here in Austin that says that kind of outreach prior to discharge is effective. I just need to get some information around that. But
great.
That's just information.
Sure. And, I mean, one thing that we didn't talk about at the last meeting, so this recommendation was brought up, and then when I was trying to kind of say, how do I couch this recommendation in something, in some data or some, something that we talked about, and I thought that maybe using the point in time counts that our continuum of care network does might be a good way of bringing in the how we're talking about persons with mental illness that don't have a connection to community-based mental health services and end up cycling from a state hospital into homelessness. So I want to make sure, because we didn't talk about the point in time count data, I want to make sure that we feel like it does provide, I guess, a good couching of our recommendation.
Oh, sure, yeah.
Okay.
I mean, that identifies the need for sure.
Good. Because I know that you attended the TICH meetings and you heard all about this data, mm-hmm. and I thought you'd be the right person to ask to make sure there was a connection that was occurring.
There is, and that's something that we are continuing to work to kind of develop. When there is, the point in time, outreach, and you're developing all this, gathering all the information, you know, is there something that we can do with it? Currently, I believe it was 12 of the 16 PATH programs across Texas actually participated. Well, scratch that. Out of 14 that I surveyed, at our last TA call, maybe it was two TA calls ago, 12 participated and two weren't there. So at least 75% participate in the point in time count in their communities.
Oh, at least that many. I know our PATH program is really active with us down here in Corpus on point in time count.
Mm-hmm.
I guess my question is, you're getting your numbers from Texas Homeless Network on the aggregate for the point in time count?
They provided, they actually provided what HUD had released from all of the point in time counts from all the continuum of care.
Right.
Yeah, so So I pulled that. I actually pulled it straight from the TICH plan, but I believe that's where they pulled it from.
Okay, because Texas Homeless Network, of course, they manage the balance of state.
Right.
Which is a large portion of it, but then
right.
us with local continuums also do our own point-in-time surveys.
Mm-hmm.
We're not always really good at reporting them to THN. So.
And I'll certainly double-check, but I think that, so Colin McGrath, who is our coordinator of the Texas Interagency Council for the Homeless,
right.
I believe that when he crafted the state plan, that what he was, the data that he was pulling from was, an aggregate of all of the point-in-time counts for the state of Texas for 2011.
Okay.
But I'll double-check that point.
Fine. We've already done the 2012 count, too, so I don't know, but I don't know how much of that's been reported further up yet.
I think it's okay. Due out in May.
Yeah.
And I think the 2012 data actually is supposed to be better because they do it, I guess it's required every 2 years. On the even year, if I'm not mistaken, I think that's what Eric Samuels from the Texas Homeless Network said.
Right.
I could be wrong, but I think that's due out towards the end of May.
Yeah, you only have to do it every 2 years, but a lot of the continuums do it every year.
Mm-hmm.
So the 11 may not have been the full count for everybody.
Okay. I'll approach our TISH coordinator Colin to make sure that we have the most recent numbers and the most comprehensive numbers we can use here.
Okay.
Right. Any other comments?
With regard to recommendation number 6, of course, I'm in favor of it. I've worked with ACT teams before. Right now, the legislature doesn't earmark money specifically for ACT, but that's not something they couldn't consider in the future. It's just they don't do that right now. The funding is kind of disseminated to the local mental health authorities, and then they identify how to best use that money to meet the needs in their communities and their counties that they serve.
Yeah, and that was something that I remember you had emailed me
that's right.
About that, and I was... And so, you know, I was thinking, does that change kind of the language that we're using in the recommendation? Because we do know that the legislature provides just I don't want to say a lump sum of money, but money that isn't specifically allocated in such specific terms as we're
right.
using.
Right.
So I don't know if we need to say something about how we think that the legislature should be pointing out ACT specifically, or if we should just be saying that out of the funding that the legislature provides to this purpose, a greater proportion could go to ACT, or that the legislature needs to increase the amount of funding that goes to this purpose and others. Because I'm just trying to figure out maybe how our wording can more accurately reflect how the legislature appropriates funding.
Yeah, that's a difficult. I think it's a difficult task because obviously we can't speak for them. I'll have to get back to you on it. I'm not sure exactly how to increase funding without kind of having a kind of earmarking it. I just don't know. I just don't know if we're going to do that. I know currently the reimbursement rates as far as Medicaid services are exactly the same whether you're an ACT service or if you're receiving psychosocial rehabilitation in one other service package, the cost is the same, or the billing is the same.
Okay. So we'll stick with
okay.
the the language about the legislature appropriating more specifically then.
Yeah, okay.
Okay. Okay. Any other comments on this document? All right, if there aren't any, then we can move on to the next agenda item, which was looking at the cross-agency education and training recommendations. As you all know, we used to have the cross-agency education and training committee, and we did come up with the recommendations from that committee that were in chapters 7 and 8 of the last plan. And so the reason why I had attached draft chapter 1 to your materials that I emailed out yesterday was that so we could look at what has been the progress made to date on those recommendations in chapter 7 and chapter 8, and which ones do we want to make an effort to recommend again in this coming plan, because I know that we don't have a specific committee to be looking at these recommendations, so therefore I'm having both the Housing and the Service Committee give me input on them. So the Chapter 7 recommendations start on page 2 of draft Chapter 1, and the recommendations from Chapter 8 start on page 4. So basically I'm just trying to get a sense of what do we feel it's important to continue recommending of these old recommendations. Anybody?
Well, I guess, I mean, I'm just looking through them again, Ashley, because I've, so the ones that are still in progress, we certainly would still want to have, I mean, we either have to keep working on them or decide that we don't want them in there at all, right?
Correct. And so, you know, I did want to see if those that, where it says the recommendation is currently in progress, if the council still feels like this should be a priority, or if given efforts in other areas that those are taking priority and this is not the priority, you know, that's kind of, I was, you know, the thing that I was hoping to talk about today.
Mm-hmm.
We certainly can include all of the ones where there isn't a lot of movement. We can certainly include those again.
Quite a bit of it's around those training modules and then also the actual communication between the state agencies, at least on the first quick facts web page. I mean, is that even attainable to have a quick facts web page within each state agency's website?
I mean, that's a good question. I mean, I think that the way that recommendation was worded in the plan was basically to make sure that there were a set of items that every state agency could include.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I mean, I think that does require a greater amount of collaboration, and it also requires that those state agencies that are represented on the council have further conversations with their IT personnel or their personnel that do technology and communications.
Mm-hmm.
So it would require a greater level of effort and work, definitely.
Okay.
But I think it's up to you guys if you don't think that it's something that, you know, feasibly could move forward, then we don't want to put something that's completely unfeasible in here.
Mm-hmm.
I see that as something that's fairly easily doable. I would advocate keeping that on the list.
Okay.
The one that I don't really remember us discussing is the training and certification program, and I think that could become very complex.
Okay, let me get to that one. What page is that on?
Maybe chapter
That's
eight,
on
three.
Page, let me see here.
I've got it on screen 5, I think.
Yeah,
5.
It's actually recommendation number 3 under chapter 8, create a service-enriched housing specialist.
Oh, yes.
Training and certification program.
Uh-huh. So that, I don't know if you remember, Donnie, but that came out of the discussion that the committee had on how we have benefits counselors, and we have a program, you know, that DAD sponsors to volunteers that can give up their time to be, you know, be trained at a AAA to learn about the opportunities and the options available to seniors who are transitioning out of institutions. And I think that, you know, what we talked about was could we create something that would possibly mirror that, where there would be some type of training or certification that local providers could have and I don't know if I think we gave a couple of examples of what types of local entities could have service and rich housing specialist training, but that it would be that somebody would be trained to know all of the options available in that local community of how affordable housing that has some connection to services.
Uh-huh.
So that was the original recommendation, and so you're thinking that maybe that would be really complicated.
Yeah, just in terms of identifying the agency that would be responsible for issuing the certification, and I just see that as being very complicated. Not that that's a deal breaker, but I think there would have to be some kind of an infrastructure that would oversee the certification process.
That's true. And can I ask, Donnie, for the benefits counselors, how are those funded?
Those are funded through DADS, through Title III of the Older Americans Act, and then also through some funding from the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services.
Got it.
And there was an interagency work group led by Texas Legal Services and involving the Texas Department of Insurance, DADS. I think those were the partner agencies, and they developed a very extensive certification program with, you know, a 400-page instruction module.
Wow.
And people have to take tests and be certified, and they have to comply with ongoing education requirements. It's a great program, but it was extremely labor-intensive, and I think there might be a possibility of expanding that curriculum to include housing content, but I think in terms of developing a standalone certification process, again, it would place quite a bit of burden on whichever agency would be tasked to keep up with that.
Okay.
And then once they're certified, we have to issue the badges, and when they, you know, when they resign, we have to get the badges back, and it just becomes difficult to manage.
Okay. All right. So we're thinking perhaps not that one. Perhaps not recommendation 10.
I might see that as a goal later on.
Okay.
But I think it would be best just to focus first on the materials, and then, you know, benefits counselors might be one population to help push the information out into the field.
Okay.
Further down, that was number 3 on that, and then if you go down to number 8,
yes,
on page 6, or not number 8, number 7.
Number 7.
It says, create a cross-agency informational pamphlet brochure geared towards persons with disabilities and persons who are elderly. Mm-hmm. A brochure for what?
So the way that the committee had recommended that is that they wanted something that had a kind of a quick listing of the programs that are funded by our state agencies that are on the council that would be basically how to get in contact with somebody if you needed accessibility modifications on your home, or like, you know, if you needed a ramp built, or who to get in touch with if you're looking into if you want to, you know, receive a or become Medicaid eligible, or if you are Medicaid eligible, learn more about a waiver.
Mm-hmm.
So it was supposed to be kind of a quick listing of the access points, I guess you could say. Into the programs that would be helping persons with disabilities and persons who are elderly.
Mm-hmm.
And that was kind of what I was trying to do with my booklets, and I realized that one doesn't work well for the web. We finally purchased the software that will allow us to edit and fix those problems with broken links. But, you know, to the extent that you guys would want to use that to help achieve the objective, that would be great with us.
And Amy, you know, just to go back, because I know that what I did here is I provided what efforts have been made mm-hmm. since the last plan, but I didn't actually provide what the exact language underneath each recommendation was.
Right.
So we have, you know, 1 to 2 paragraphs that are written okay. in the last plan to explain each of these recommendations.
Right.
I just pulled out just the top sentence of the recommendation.
I just couldn't remember what kind of brochure it was going to be.
Right.
It's something that could be fairly easily put together.
Mm-hmm.
And then number 8, right below that, is HHSC, you know, our website for state agencies. I mean, I would think if you put some links on that website that would at least begin meeting that.
Yeah, you're right. I think that recommendation number 8 is very doable. I think that really it's just setting aside the time or making it the priority. Because, I mean, as you can see, in our list of what's been accomplished from Chapter 7 and Chapter 8, some of these things moved forward very quickly because there was, you know, a lot of interest or a lot of feedback generated from them.
Right.
So, you know, we created the reference guide. We created the listserv, the HHSC listserv. We met with the Texas Information Referral Network. You know, we applied for the CMS grant, which will help us do a lot of this stuff, such as the clearinghouse. So some of these, you know, have moved forward. I think we just need to make sure that we know which ones we want to put council staff efforts towards in the coming year.
Right.
And we can certainly make number 8 on the top of our list.
Okay, I'm just wondering, you know, if we can get some of the easy ones out of the way.
Sure.
Then, you know, you show progress and you actually have some things taken off of there, too.
Sure, yeah, you're right.
So. Do we know how many people are using that reference guide, or is it being used, or can we tell?
I might be able to have our IT people. They might be able to say hits.
They can do that.
Yeah. For a PDF document, they can.
I think they can.
Okay. I'll look into that.
I just wondered if it's, you know, because we don't want y'all doing things that aren't being, you know, spending your time on something that's not useful either. I mean, maybe we thought it was a great idea, but maybe it's not useful to.
Sure.
So.
Yeah, I'll definitely I'll ask our IT people if they can find out that information. Anything else on this these chapters 7 and 8?
I know we were going to, when we talked about the intranet for information dissemination amongst the agency staff, was there anything specific, I mean, what specifically were we going to plan on disseminating through that? And is that something that, because it just says it's in progress, is that something that requires agreements, or is that just, you know, Is that kind of covered with the listserv because people can meet the agency on the listserv?
I think that the since there was a discussion when we were crafting the last plan that for some of the larger state agencies that are that you know don't just have hundreds of staff like TDHCA but have thousands if not tens of thousands of staff,
right?
Some of the under the HHSC umbrella, that part of the problems that people were seeing in talking to those larger agencies is that one division would actually not know much about what another division was doing within their own agency.
Right.
And that was a barrier that was expressed. So I think what we were looking at there was, how can the intranet be used? And we also kind of talked about a periodic program update, which is the very next recommendation. Mm-hmm. And those were both how can we find a way of disseminating information about programs relevant to community-based services and affordable housing for people with disabilities and the elderly, within agencies. And so, for example, I was looking at just recently, DSHS has I don't know if they call it a briefing, but it looks kind of like a newsletter that's specific for the people within DSHS. Bill, do you know what I'm talking about?
Mm-hmm.
And so that was something where I said, oh, okay, so DSHS is updating its own staff as to here's the progress made on certain programs, or here's how you know who's actually doing the work on these programs. You know, here's a picture of this staff member, and they're taking on the behavioral health pilot for the Money Follows the Person program.
Right.
And so, you know, I saw that they had, you know, something like that, and I thought, you know, should that be replicated in other state agencies? That way we are making sure that all staff are educated as to the programs relevant to service-enriched housing.
Right.
So I think that that's where that was going, and in terms of whether or not it would require, you know, what kind of effort it would require,
mm-hmm.
I think it actually could be fairly, you know, a fairly easy thing to do. I think the problem is maintenance, because it would be a continual thing. And so, you know, who's going to be updating this, you know, if it is a periodic program update or if it's, you know, an update on the intranet, you know, who's doing that updating and what are they crafting?
Right.
Because I think we would have to have liaisons from our different state agencies agree to be that point person.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean we shouldn't recommend it.
Right. Well, again, I think, you know, those two are getting everybody on the same page, and if they're somewhat easy to do, then it might be those might be good ones to, you know, that can be accomplished fairly easily without too many resources, then that would be great.
Yeah, I think what we'd have to do is work through the representatives of the state agencies that are on the council for them to identify somebody,
mm-hmm.
And also make sure that we have the buy-in of, you know, that division director to say that this person could do something of that nature, and then, you know, make some parameters.
Right. I see so many of them are training modules and getting people to go to trainings and things like that, and I just think those are going to be much more complicated in, you know, getting people to actually want to do the trainings and mm-hmm. get the trainings written and those kind of things. I think those are going to be a little more time and resource intensive than some of the other.
Yeah, that's true. That's very true.
And they may not create the results that we want. So.
I'm not sure how easy it would be, but if we could establish some type of, you know, almost like links, referral network, whatever, you know, that looks like, where we wouldn't have to kind of, you know, try to really put everything, you know, in one place, but, you know, kind of say, you know, if you come to one site or to one person and you need, I'm just going to say mental health services, I can tell you where to go to look it up, you know, in your either city, county, region, you know, whatever, because we can pull that up on our website. I don't know how easy it would be to take what we have here and export it over.
Well, that will be something that the clearinghouse will hopefully accomplish. The CMS grant that, you know, is currently underway, one of the items there is we're working with HHSC to modify 211 Texas website for this purpose. So I'm hoping we'll get somewhere on that, on that good recommendation. Okay. Amy, can I ask a question about the comment you made on the training module stuff?
Yes.
When you said we may not get the results we want,
right?
What exactly do you mean there?
Well, I just think about people signing up for trainings and how hard it is to even get my staff to go to trainings.
Uh-huh.
And so then if we don't have people there, then we're not going to get the results we want because, you know, it just gets really complicated. I mean, that's, I think, you know, we're also busy and we've taken on more, as you know, with budget cuts and everything, even out here in this world, we've taken on more and more tasks, and it's hard to go for a day-long training or a half-day training or something. And then our, you know, our travel budgets are reduced and those kind of things. So I'm just not sure that, like, especially if we want to do live trainings, that we'll get the results we need. I mean, I was in a meeting yesterday. We've got a training going on down here that's going to be a really great trauma-informed care training. And, you know, they're getting people signed up, but they're nowhere close to the number they wanted to have attend yet.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're really having to do a lot of outreach to get people to attend. So then it just becomes very labor-intensive to get those trainings out to your targeted market and to get them in to attend. And so I think that's my only thing there is that, you know, training is wonderful. It's just, unfortunately, right now, it's everybody's travel budgets are reduced and their job descriptions have tripled, and so they just, training is like the last thing that they want to go do.
Yeah, I understand that. I understand that, absolutely. Those barriers and obstacles, you know, maybe that's something that we bring up in our barriers chapter. I mean, that's not the typical barrier you think of, but I think it's something that's relevant.
Right.
That, you know, you, in the attempts of, the, you know, because the council statute is trying to say that there needs to be this cross-education happening, and so I think we should address the barrier of state agencies and their local administrators being able to get training is simply that, you know, we're looking at a budget situation that makes that difficult.
Right. Yeah, and that's where you go more in, I think, the webinars.
Mm-hmm.
You know, doing most of them, webinars are easier to do because I can sit at my desk and watch a webinar while I'm actually, you know, possibly even doing, I'm accessible to my staff, I'm not off-site, those kind of things. So.
Right.
So the delivery might be the most important part of that.
Got it. Okay, great. Are there any other comments on the cross-agency education and training recommendations so far?
It's a nice job.
All right, well, what I can do is I can... the ones that you've pointed out as ones that are, you know, more doable, what I can do is I can craft some language about continuing these recommendations from the last plan, saying we want to continue to make progress on them. And so we're not trying to come up with an entirely new set of recommendations along these lines because it only has been less than 2 years since we submitted this last plan. So, you know, can't change the world that quickly, unfortunately. So what I'll do is I'll type up that information that you've given me today and any edits that you've made to the current recommendations chapter or previous chapters. So are there any items for the next conference call? Anything that you guys need me to gather or write up that for this committee.
I can't think of anything.
Okay. All right, well, our next committee meeting, that's the April 25th meeting, that will be the last committee call before our May 15th council meeting. I think that we are, you know, right now, given that we've agreed upon what the outline of the draft plan is going to look like, and I'll be continuing to send you guys electronically the draft chapters as I create them. But I think that we're nearing the end of the time for these committee calls, given that we've been receiving a whole lot of feedback and typing up all that feedback. I think that at this point, a lot of it just comes down to me being able to take the time to write. So if that's okay with everyone, I think that April 25th is going to be our last conference call before the May 15th in-person meeting.
That should be fine.
Okay. Thanks, Ashley.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So April 25th at 10 a.m. is our next call, and thank you guys for attending.
Thank you.
Thank you.